average life expectancy in the U.S. dropped in 2021 to 76.1 years. It continued a downward trend from 2020 that was the biggest decrease in U.S. life expectancy since World War II. COVID-19 has been a significant contributor to that decline, but the pandemic also added to some negative health trends that have been problems even before 2020. We're taking a closer look at some of the bigger public health trends that led to lower life expectancy and some possible solutions, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about life expectancy in the U.S. and why it's gone down the last couple of years? If you work in the healthcare industry, what kind of things are you seeing? Are you optimistic we'll turn things around as we get further removed from the peak of the pandemic? Are there lessons you think or hope we've learned from the pandemic that can make our health better in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michal Engelman is an associate professor of sociology at the UW-Madison and director of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. Michal, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Before we dig into the story behind these numbers, can you tell us what this life expectancy measure we're seeing in the headlines actually measures?
Sure. So life expectancy is basically the average number of years that people in the United States live. So it's a population level average. It tells us how long people live, and the way it's calculated when you hear things like life expectancy in 2021 or in 2020 is by taking into account, into a mathematical model, information about death rates at every age, and sort of adding all of that up to figure out, on average, how long people live.
Now, a lot of the story of this decline in life expectancy has to do with COVID, but I want to start a little before that and set the stage. We see charts where when we compare the United States to, say, a lot of European countries, pre-COVID, we had a lower life expectancy there, and we saw some disparities behind those numbers. Can you set the stage with us before the pandemic even hit?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. What we saw here, even before the pandemic, was a situation where life expectancy in the United States had fallen behind that of peer countries, especially other high-income countries. In all places, including in the United States, what we were used to seeing over the course of the 20th century and even a little bit before was steady increases in life expectancy between innovations in healthcare, innovations in standard of living, better sanitation, better living conditions, better working conditions. We had gotten used to a situation where kind of every year we seemed to be doing better and better. We got better at improving the health of infants and the health of mothers and the health of teenagers and the health of middle-aged people and even pushing back chronic disease and mortality in later life. So things were improving. But over the last couple of decades, actually, even though we continue to see some improvements in the United States, the pace of those improvements was falling behind that of other countries. They were sort of getting better at a faster pace. And then over the last, I would say, you know, 5 or 6 years, we noticed that not only was the U.S. not improving as rapidly as other countries, but we seemed to be kind of holding steady or stagnating. We just weren't making progress at the same pace. And so there was already a lot of concern among people in the research community and in the policy community about why it is that the U.S. wasn't keeping up with other countries and what it was about potentially inequities within our own country and differences in health and longevity between different subgroups that might be contributing to that. And then the pandemic sort of came on the scene and really mapped on and exacerbated those
patterns. Right. So 2020 hits, COVID-19 hits, and not only does life expectancy go down in the United States, as I mentioned, it looks, as if you look at the charts, the gap between the United States and European countries gets even bigger than it was pre-pandemic. Why?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you know, one has to do with sort of the extent to which the United States was prepared or unprepared for COVID and the way in which we responded to the pandemic relative to responses in other countries. So the way in which we kind of approached questions that had to do with mitigation strategies that included everything from kind of the early days of lockdowns to then later debates about masking and about vaccination, the U.S. approached all of that very differently in terms of its pandemic response. But part of it is also those pre-existing inequities sort of left large swaths of the U.S. population more vulnerable to the negative impact of the pandemic as well. And so it mapped on for that. We also see that whereas in many other peer countries, 2020 saw a big drop, and then we saw kind of an improvement in life expectancy in 2021. What we see in the U.S. is kind of a continued drop rather than an improvement.
We're talking to Michal Engelman, Associate Professor of Sociology at UW-Madison, Director of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. We're talking about this story. You may have seen the headlines, life expectancy going down in the United States in 2020, no surprise. But again, in 2021, a little more of a surprise. We're looking at what's led to that, how we can get out of it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your reactions to the news, your thoughts on why this is happening, possible solutions, and of course, your questions. 800-642-1234 is the number. Michal, you mentioned a couple times the inequities in health in the United States, and I know that comes in many forms. Healthcare access, healthy communities. Can you talk about some of the biggest disparities you see in the United States?
Absolutely. So first of all, I would say, you know, the United States, when the pandemic hit, was already a country that was really struggling with racialized inequities, both in health and in wealth, right? So wealth in terms of access to resources that allow people to access healthcare, but also in terms of accessing resources that keep them healthy and not needing specialized healthcare in the first place. And these inequities correspond with long-standing patterns of geographic segregation. So you see big differences in life expectancy, even within individual cities in the U.S. By zip codes, in different neighborhoods. There's also geographic differences between urban areas and rural areas. And of course, all of this is also related to the political polarization in our country. And so when the pandemic hit, you might remember, it first kind of appeared in urban areas where people live and work and play sort of in close quarters. And so the pandemic first really disproportionately affected relatively younger members of Indigenous, Black, and Latino communities, especially those that were serving as frontline workers, I would say both in healthcare as well as in other kind of food preparation and service sectors. And then over the past year, you see that it's been affecting white populations more broadly and spreading throughout the countries, with kind of popping up in different hotspots around our state and around the country.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know we like to use inequities for a lot of reasons why things get bad. But I think we're overlooking a major factor, and that's the obesity rate in the United States is far higher than any other Western country in the world. Can we discuss more about poor dieting and kind of get away from the inequity thing and focus on the real elephant in the room in regards to what the average American consumes on a daily basis based on caloric needs, the type of foods they're eating, the type of lifestyles we're living is a lot different than Europe and around the world. So,
Jeremy, I gotcha. Michal, what do we know about the impact of obesity, Jeremy wonders, and nutrition in the United States and its impact on some of these differences?
So, I mean, Jeremy is right that obesity rates in the United States are high, but it turns out that research that's trying to link obesity to specifically life expectancy and mortality shows us that it's not always so straightforward. So there's no doubt that obesity increases the risk of many chronic conditions, especially things like cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and things that also kind of are major causes of death beyond COVID over the last few years, but it's also the case that obesity in and of itself is an outcome of some of the social and economic inequities that we're talking about. There are big differences in the foods that people have access to, the time they have to engage in exercise, the places that they have access to in being active. And so, you know, while certainly it contributes to poor health, I think there are the links to mortality still there's still a lot of research looking into that in particular, and also increasingly a recognition that we have to ask sort of why is it so different? Why are these rates so different in America relative to other places? And why are they so different even within America?
We're talking to sociology professor Michal Engelman about declining U.S. life expectancy over the last couple of years and what it could take to turn it around. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think the U.S. pandemic response impacted our life expectancy, our long-term well-being? What would you like to have seen done differently? And even setting the pandemic aside, to the extent we can do that, what do you wonder about? What kind of health factors do you think are at play here? What questions do you have for our guest? Have you lived both in the United States and in a place like, say, Europe, where life expectancy tends to be longer, where the impact of the pandemic overall seems to have been less on life expectancy? Compare and contrast. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Michal Engelman. She's an associate professor of sociology at UW-Madison and director of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. She's with us today looking at why life expectancy has declined over the last couple of years in the United States. Longer-term trends even before the pandemic, too, had raised some warning flags, and looking at what we could do to maybe turn things around. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your reactions to that news, your thoughts, your questions for our guest. And do you think we need changes to how we provide healthcare in the United States, for example? How we react to the outbreak of new diseases? If you work in healthcare, love to hear what you've seen over the last couple of years. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michal, let's start to look at some possible solutions. Do you see low-hanging fruit out there where we could make a big difference, hopefully, without huge investments that would take maybe years to develop?
That's a good question, right? I mean, certainly, I think, you know, one of the key things is when you see a decline this big, you know that things can be better because we've been there before, right? And so at the very least, we can try to make up some of the recent losses and then kind of continue to think more about how we get beyond there and how we catch up to where other countries have been. And so I think, you know, it is reassuring to see that the declines, while still going on, are becoming less, right? And I think we can attribute that to higher rates of vaccinations and to also higher rates of people who have been sick and have developed, you know, some immunity, some resistance to a virus that unfortunately seems like it will be with us for a long time. I think, you know, we have learned a lot about things that we can do as individuals to protect ourselves from COVID. We've also learned that there are many things that can happen on a broader scale, right? Like improving ventilation in buildings like schools and office buildings and places where people spend a lot of time together. So all of these sort of accumulated knowledge, I think, will help keep us safe from the pandemic specifically. And then I think we've also learned that in many ways, you know, in the US, we are most comfortable thinking about what it is that we as individuals can do ourselves in order to keep ourselves well and healthy. But if there is one lesson that we learn from a pandemic that is global in this way, is that we really all are in some ways all in this together, whether we want to or not. And the best way the best sort of tools or the best things that we can do in order to do better in terms of life expectancy is to work collectively on improving the health of the public.
How about our public health system, or I guess systems, because we have federal agencies and state and county and local. And I think an accusation made, and probably pretty fair, was that they didn't necessarily coordinate that well at every level when the pandemic started. Can we do better?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you're right that coordination across the multiple levels is key. I think one thing that has been really striking, or that I've noticed in observing, is that, you know, people do still seem to have good levels of trust in their local public health authorities, right? There is a sense that there are people here on the ground in your town, right, in your state, who really kind of understand the situation. There is less trust that I've seen sort of, and at higher level things, right? As you said, there have been criticisms of the way in which the pandemic has been handled on the federal government level in terms of the CDC. So there, I think, you know, in addition to coordination, communication is really clear, right? Pandemics are confusing. There's a lot happening as they move through the population. Our knowledge changes and the science changes. And what has been really, really tricky here is, I think, figuring out how to clearly communicate to people both what's happening in real time, but also how to understand the fact that the facts might be changing. And that means, you know, changing kind of our behavior and response as well. And so I agree that, you know, there is room for improvement on the communication front and in helping people understand what is it that's guiding the recommendations that are coming down from public health authorities, right? We focus a lot on understanding and translating the science. I think it's also important to be really clear in communicating what our values are and what it is that we're trying to do, right? How do we improve health for large swaths of people, even when we are sometimes asking individuals, right, to make sacrifices that they're not especially excited to make?
We're talking to Michal Engelman, Associate Professor of Sociology at UW-Madison, looking at the news you may have seen, declining life expectancy in the U.S. over the last couple of years, looking at the reasons behind it, possible solutions. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Let's bring on another caller now. Steve is with us in Chippewa Falls. Steve, hi.
I didn't catch the whole show, but it strikes me that drug addiction deaths, like when an 18-year-old dies of a drug overdose, as far as life expectancy goes, that's going to be about as impactful as 15 or 16 older people dying from COVID. So wouldn't the low-hanging fruit be addressing drug addiction and the availability of fentanyl? Isn't that really what we should be focusing on rather than fighting the last war?
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Michal, Steve brings up, I was going to actually hoping to get into both overdose deaths and other things that public health people call disease of despair, overdoses, yeah. Long-term effect of addiction, suicide. Do we need more focus on those things, as Steve says?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, even in the most recent statistics that came out, we saw that in this past year, the decline that we're talking about between 2020 and 21, 50% of that is due to COVID, but the rest is due to an increase in deaths for a number of reasons. And sort of top among those other reasons is sort of things that are considered unintentional injuries, of which drug overdoses account for nearly half, right, of that. And so, you know, you're right. It's an enormous problem. I think, you know, more than something close, over 100,000 overdose deaths in a one-year period, you know, in the most recent one-year period. So it is definitely a huge issue. And I think, you know, the mortality from drug overdoses goes along with mortality from suicide, from other diseases that have to do with alcohol abuse, as well as drug abuse, right? And so there are certainly kind of a conglomeration of causes of death that seem to be related to a deep kind of malaise. Researchers have called it deaths of despair, and talked about the way in which, you know, it may be a way in which people's kind of dissatisfaction with life, with their standing, right, with the way things are going, are really manifesting in their health. And absolutely, that is a major issue. I think, you know, one of the challenges for public health authorities is not so much ranking and choosing between different causes of death, but really sort of figuring out how do we marshal the resources to address all of them, because they each require different kinds of solutions, even as sometimes many of them affect many of the same populations.
Thanks for that call, Steve. Michal, are you hoping that, you know, when we see a number like this, the annual report showing this decline in life expectancy, that gets a sense of urgency in people who make decisions that affect how we react to problems, whether they're an infectious disease or whether they're overdoses?
You know, as somebody who studies these statistics, I certainly hope so, right? I mean, it's pretty stark evidence that something's not going right, and that these mortality statistics, we call them summary measures of population health, right? Within a single number, you can really convey a lot of information that things don't seem to be going right. And so, yeah, the hope is definitely that in publishing these reports, this gives us impetus for moving in the right direction. But I have to say, you know, I would love to think that evidence and data and research are the main thing that drive policy decisions and decisions about how to allocate resources. But I think we all know that there are a lot of politics and that come into play here as well. So I'm very, very hopeful that these numbers can serve as a wake-up call and help us really figure out, you know, how to focus, how to make things better, and how to address both the mortality and the underlying conditions that are causing it. So
we'll leave it there, Michal. Thanks again for joining us today.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
That's Michal Engelman, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the director there of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. She's with us today for a look at a decline in life expectancy in the United States over the last couple of years. Yes, partly because of COVID, but that's not the whole story, and for a look at possible solutions over the next few years.